Namaste and welcome to the new episode of Freedom Chowdhary podcast. This is your host Subhash Dahal for this 141th episode of Freedom Chowdhary podcast. On this 141th episode of Freedom Chowdhary podcast, we are going to rebroadcast some sections of OBS 23 launched by International Budget Partnership, which is the 9th edition of Open Budget Survey covering 125 countries across the globe. As detailed on the Open Budget Survey press release by International Budget Partnership, amid historic level of crippling global debt, the Open Budget Survey finds that countries are not sufficiently transparent and accountable about how they are managing their debt or spending on important social sectors like health, sanitation, and other services. Despite modest gains in this latest Open Budget Survey round, governments are not providing enough information and opportunities for engagement on how they are managing debt and executing budget in later stages of the budget process. This latest round found a modest 1-point increase in global budget transparency scores compared to the previous round. Nevertheless, regional trends show two stories, one of sustained progress and one of downward peril. Since 2012, East Asia and the Pacific and Sub-Saharan Africa have had the steepest increase over time. Their progress, along with that of Eastern Europe and Central Asia and Latin America and the Caribbean, contrast with a significant fall over time in South Asia, stagnation in Western Europe, US and Canada, and continued low performance in the Middle East and North Africa. With this, now let's listen to the Open Budget Survey 23 launch by International Budget Partnership.
Welcome. I am Ana Patricia Munoz, the International Budget Partnership Executive Director. And IBP has been working for over 25 years with government reformers, with civil society organizations, budget analysts, social movements around the world to make sure that governments raise and spend public funds in an equitable and efficient manner. And to do so, we work in hundreds with partners in hundreds of countries to make sure that we can strengthen the capacities, provide data, push for reforms to make sure that public policies are implemented in a way that they reduce inequalities and they increase public participation. We are very excited to launch the Open Budget Survey today, the OBS 2023. And as you will see this morning, we are very happy to have a fantastic panel where we'll have government reformers, civil society leaders. We're going to have, of course, today opening remarks from Sri Mulyani, Minister of Finance from Indonesia. We're going to hear some of the highlights from the Open Budget Survey. Of course, this has 30,000 indicators, so we cannot present everything, but you're going to hear a little bit of those highlights from Austin and also from a video that we have ready for you. We want this morning to be engaging. All of you have been part of this community. We've had registrants from 137 countries. More than 1,000 people want to join this morning. And of course, this is only the beginning of the conversation. We now turn to Austin Nduokelo, who's the Director of Policy and Global Advocacy at the International Budget Partnership. Austin, back to you.
Thank you so much, Ana Patricia. On behalf of International Budget Partnership, I say welcome, bienvenue, bienvenida, marhaba, and selamat datang. In many cultures around the world, as well as in science, technology, religion, and mathematics, the number 9 is quite a significant number. We have expressions like a cat with 9 lives, in reference to a state where one keeps getting out of difficult or dangerous situations without being harmed. 9 is also the highest single-digit number, in addition to being associated with reflecting a state of completeness. So today, the 29th day of May 2024, the International Budget Partnership is happy and honored to formally unveil the 9th edition of the Open Budget Survey. So 9 surveys over the past 18 years, and the message of the survey is unarguably more important than ever, especially in these turbulent times. We are releasing the report to an expectant global audience, that is all of you connected, Living on this planet that continues to grapple with multidimensional challenges on multiple fronts. To address these urgent challenges, governments need to be more honest, open, and inclusive with their public about how they are managing public resources. At the International Budget Partnership, we have always believed firmly in the power of open budgets and accountable budget processes to the broader democratic process. When governments let the public into these very consequential decisions, they can bolster trust in their ability to deliver what people need. It was this burning desire and this burning passion that inspired the creation of the OBS, the Open Budget Survey, the world's only independent, comparative, and regular measure of budget transparency and accountability around the world. The OBS research process embodies the spirit and values of our worldwide network of open budget champions. It is a locally led and massive collective undertaking by local researchers and advocates, peer reviewers, and government reviewers at the different country levels. The latest round is our biggest one yet. Why? Because it covers 125 countries, which are home, wait for it, 7.5 billion people. That represents 95% of the world's population, and including budgets totaling more than $33.5 trillion in spending in just the fiscal year 2022 alone. Together with our network of dependable partners, we completed 30,000 indicators across all surveyed countries, assessing 672 publicly available budget documents and 299 participation mechanisms. Through our collective analysis, we have been able to surface key trends, sound the alarm on emerging concerns, and spotlight bright spots that serve as a roadmap for others to follow. Here are a few quick highlights from the OBS 2023 results. We have found that across the different pillars that the OBS measures, we find a mix of performance and divergent paths. First of all, the global averages for transparency, public participation, and oversight are at similar levels that we've seen in past rounds. There has been slow incremental improvements globally on transparency, though this is still far below what would be considered sufficient. There's a progress on public participation, though it is still the weakest area of the three pillars. Worryingly, legislative oversight has steadily declined over the past two survey rounds, falling 3 points from its pre-pandemic mark. Audit oversight has remained steady during that time. Now, when we look at regional trends, we see an interesting dynamic. It becomes clear that some regions are faring better than others. Clear progress we are seeing in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, East Asia and the Pacific, Latin America and the Caribbean, and Sub-Saharan Africa. This contrasts with a significant fall in South Asia, stagnation in Western Europe and the United States, and continued low performance in the Middle East and North Africa, albeit improving steadily over time. This round's global report features a deeper dive into the data, pulling out what is most important to marginalized communities. We know that to spend money, governments need money. They get it by raising tax and non-tax revenue, or by borrowing it. And the budget is the vehicle through which those decisions are made. Our survey finds that most countries fall short on providing critical information around debt and taxes. When it comes to tax expenditures, that is, the foregone revenue from tax concessions and waivers, only 16% of governments provide a policy rationale, estimate of revenue loss, and the intended beneficiaries. We also find that important information on debt and fiscal risk is often missing in budget documents. Only 11% of those assessed include in their executive budget proposal, that is a draft that goes to the legislature, a longer-term projection of financial sustainability that covers a period of at least 10 years. This information can be hugely valuable to the public as they seek to better understand their government's fiscal health. Listen to this. Half the world's population lives in countries that spend more on debt payments than on health or education. The OBS also looks at if governments are publishing information on their budgets or how their budgets are intended to reduce poverty levels. we found that 42% of governments provide this information in their budget proposals. However, only 19% include it in their end of year reporting. Now, when it comes to public participation, we see some improvements, but less than a third of line ministries invite people's input into sector budgets, much less than finance ministries and legislatures. This is a reform opportunity as line ministries make important decisions around social spending that directly impacts people's lives. Effective oversight is another important complement to public participation. Auditors and legislatures play different roles, and our findings continue to identify key gaps that threaten the overall budget accountability system. In particular, the pandemic provided an excuse for many executives to sidestep the legislature, and the legislative oversight practices have not bounced back since then. We find that fewer legislatures approve the budget on time, examining in-year budget execution, and examine the audit report as compared to before the COVID pandemic. In conclusion, IBP and our network of partners continue to insist that significant, sustained, and meaningful progress towards more open budgeting systems is possible. Countries from across different regions, income and development levels, and systems have made progress across transparency, across public participation, and oversight. We invite you to engage with the survey. Please read the global report, which contains rich country examples and examines how communities can leverage the power of budget information. Review the 125 country summaries, each with tailored recommendations for how countries can improve. Dive deeper into the data and use the OBS calculator to simulate how reforms will be reflected on the next survey. Finally, IBP wants to thank our esteemed partners for their continued support and commitment to this joint research and advocacy effort. We stand ready at all times to collaborate with governments, with legislators, with auditors, with donors, and other key stakeholders to collectively realize a better, more open, and accountable future for all of us. Back to you, Ana Patricia.
Thank you so much, Austin. You heard some of the highlights and of the results of this survey. And of course, there's much more in our website and in the individual reports and the global report that we invite you to read after this event so you can pay attention today. And as Austin explained, sometimes you know the process is as important as the results. This process of over 2 years includes civil society organizations, governments, more than 100 governments that reviewed the results, and of course, other researchers to make this the most consistent and critical way where we can collect data in a systematic and rigorous way. And this morning, it's a reflection of exactly that. We want to showcase in our panelists what we showcase throughout the process in the OBS, which is that collaboration between different sectors. Now, we talk about the challenges. Austin shared many of them, but it's also important for us to share paths to progress that show some of those examples, and hopefully that will get us inspired to do more in these challenging times.
Trust, accountability, meaningful engagement. These values are critical as countries around the globe grapple with conflict, climate change, debt, and the long shadow of the pandemic's impacts. Governments win when they bring everyday people into the budget process, even in the most challenging times. The Open Budget Survey shows us how. Tanzania's new government worked with civil society to improve how it presents budgetary information, including through a new user-friendly website. Moldova's Ministry of Finance improved communications while coping with the effects of the war in neighboring Ukraine. Feminist groups spurred Argentina to continue reinventing the way it presents budget data for gender equality. The Kyrgyz Republic and Nigeria are improving reporting and seeking public consultation on debt. These bright spots show what's possible, but most countries must do more to engage their people throughout the budgeting process. Although 83% of countries use at least one channel to engage the public, most governments do so in the early stages of the budget process. Few governments engage their publics during implementation. This leaves the public out of the conversation right when they are most needed to ensure budget promises are delivered. The oversight rules of legislatures continue to weaken following the pandemic, and only 11% of countries include the public in legislative hearings of audit reports. With more participation, we can ensure that budgets deliver for people. The Dominican Republic is showing the way to create a shared agenda for growth. Local communities hold public hearings to propose investments they would like to see in their communities. The government posts on a website which requests made it into the national budget. In the Gambia, the Ministry of Finance, the Legislature, and the National Audit Office are finding innovative ways to engage the public in the budget process. Through these efforts, they are inspiring a greater sense of trust in this new democracy's ability to deliver for its people. Everyone stands to gain when the public is meaningfully involved. Progress is possible everywhere.
Yes, budgets are more than numbers and data. They are more than just ticking boxes or following a process. They really are a reflection of a country's values, of where government and the society has put their priorities, of what concretely can be done to reduce inequality and address the challenges that we're facing. We're definitely seeing some clear trends there where public participation, it's at almost half of the participants today that think that's where they think we should see more and better improvements. And of course, this participation should be meaningful. It should have real consequences in the decision-making process. So public participation, and then the second thing that was rated the highest in this brief poll today was budget execution. So although you have not seen the report, it looks like you were paying attention to Austin's remarks, where he did mention that although there is improvement on the budget release and preparation and approval, there's way more things that can be done on the data for budget execution. And this is going to be very important to make sure that actually public policies are implemented as they were intended. And now we're going to turn to the opening remarks from Sri Mulyani, who's the Minister of Finance from Indonesia. She has been guiding Southeast Asia's largest economy not once, but twice. She's received several accolades for the way she handled the economy during the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. She's been named as the best Minister of Finance and one of the most powerful women by Forbes magazine. So it's an honor to hear her opening remarks today.
Good morning. It is really a great honor for me to join you all in this highly esteemed forum, even though I am unable to attend in person. I sincerely hope that Indonesia's experience in implementing transparency practices can serve as a valuable lesson for all my colleagues present at today's event. Promoting and enhancing budget transparency and public participation in developing countries like Indonesia is a challenging task. Indonesia's reading interests remain low. We need extra effort to improve the literacy of our people. This is also include increasing understanding of our national budget. We have approximately 221.5 million internet users, or nearly 80% of our population. It is becoming very easy for us to disseminate using digital technology. Our national budget has been shared across Indonesia. We also developed a citizen-friendly budget to help the public understanding on our budget without needing them to read the extensive financial note. Since 2018, the Ministry of Finance has held a press conference every month to report the implementation of our current budget, which we disclose the budget realization both on the revenue side, spending, as well as financing. Over the past 2 years, we also conducted public consultation, especially during the drafting of our budget bill. This public consultation will provide us with a much better perspective of what people feel, what people need, and at the same time combining with our technocracy so that we are able to present the sound and credible budget bill. The introduction of the principle of budget transparency into our budget is still very young. But we have all the commitment to make sure that this transparency, accountability is always identical with the budget process and the budget law itself. We also have to comply with the law on the public information disclosure to get the data of our budget easier, faster, and timely. The government of Indonesia committed to this transparency. And this is also the foundation of our healthy democracy. With this kind of practice, we get the open budget index value, which is continuously improving. Even during the pandemic, the Indonesia government continue stick with this principle. Budget transparency or budget openness is a fundamental principle that must underpin the governance of every country in the world. Accountability, transparency, and credibility are essential. This is like a currency. Without credibility, transparency, and accountability, there is no trust to the budget and to the Ministry of Finance as an important institution. Maintaining budget transparency require the involvement of multiple stakeholders, not only on the government side, but also on the legislative side, as well as audit institution, and the most important is the public. The tax that being paid by public need to be explained how we use this taxpayer money. Transparency, as well as giving assurance regarding the effectiveness of the budget, will provide the trust and credibility for taxpayer. Equally important, we also involve with many civil society organizations. Organizations like the International Budget Partnership play a crucial role in promoting budget transparency values, as well as providing ongoing support and assistance. This has proven effective in helping countries overcoming challenges and improving their budget openness. Indonesia will continue to enhance our public participation in the budgeting process. We are going to get the feedback on how the budget is being executed. Many of the feedback is coming from efficiency or related to the governance problem will become valuable information to make sure that we prevent the misuse or abuse of our budget. In closing, I would like to say that budget openness is beyond reporting number. It involves the transparency, participation, accountability, and the most important, understanding, so that inclusiveness and comprehensiveness can be achieved. The budget of any country is a critical policy instrument. So managing the budget well will provide prosperity and equality for all our people. Thank you so much for providing me with the opportunity to share with you.
Thank you so much. We heard a lot of important messages and highlights, but one thing that stuck with me is this idea that transparency and accountability equals trust. And this trust is the foundation of democracy. So we're hearing several messages that this, again, is not about just releasing data. It's really about inclusivity and about changing the way we think about democracy. And with that, I'm thrilled to get started with our panel discussion today. I'm going to give first a quick introduction to our three panelists.
It's an honor for us to welcome the Minister of Finance from Guatemala, Jonathan Mencos. And it's very special because Jonathan is from civil society. We were very impressed by the quality of his analysis and his commitment. He came into office, and people have very high expectations of him.
Lisa John. Lisa is the Secretary General at Civicus, who's the leading global organization making sure that we enhance, preserve civic space. Actually, Civicus has been named by DevEx as one of the most important global development organizations to watch for in 2024. And as Lisa herself will remind us, she was a budget analyst once at a time. So we're going to remind her of that when we welcome her for her remarks.
And also we have Karim Trabelsi, who is an economic advisor with the Tunisian General Labor Union, the UGTT. And he's been working since 2015, working to build democracy in Tunisia.
Now we're going to begin with the minister. As I mentioned at the beginning, there's many expectations about the reforms that you are going to implement in Guatemala. There's also been publication of some information already, and we would like to know the details of those reforms and those changes that you expect to implement with respect to the budget and budgetary process and how that is related to Guatemala's development goals.
First of all, it is a pleasure to be here, Ana Patricia. Greetings to the entire team of the IBP, and especially you, Alexander Ciconello, and everyone who has made this event possible and what we are seeing today, which is the fruit of many years of work. I've learned a lot from the reports, but from the OBS, but also through all those spaces that you've promoted throughout the world. In Guatemala, we have a very clear mandate. Society last year in August decided that our political project was going to be the one in charge of the government. We come from a context where there's been a great deal of issues, a lack of trust in the government because of corruption. The first task that we've done was to fight against corruption, but also to transform the public budget into actions that will allow us to promote the well-being of our citizens as well as development. We've been working with IBP, and the public budget in the 21st century is the most important tool in order to achieve development and democracy. It is precisely the public budget where we define what rights are going to be guaranteed, to what extent, how we're going to provide certainty to each one of the citizens of our nation. That's why the public budget has to be continuously discussed by society. In our work plan, we have a reform of the methodology through which we as public institutions approach citizens. Next week, we will launch a reflection on our open budget. It is the first time in the history of my country when we are linking the planning stage with the budget so that people are also aware that the results, bringing results, require resources, efficiency, capabilities by the institutions to achieve those results. We are also working on the need to expand the capacity to generate information so that the different stakeholders in society can have access to this information with any type of challenges or obstacles. As you said, last week we launched a module with the support of Red Ciudadana, which is a civil society organization. The objective is to develop different types of modules to facilitate access to the large databases that we have in our public administration so that they can be analyzed, reviewed, and of course, in order to have that ongoing dialogue that we want to have with society. Another challenge that we are facing in Guatemala has to do with accountability. We, at this very moment, are moving forward toward greater and better result evaluations and efficiencies of public spending. We need people to know what is happening with each cent that is part of the public budget and that has to translate into better schools for boys, girls, and adolescents. We also need more development. We need to assess the efficiency of public spending and investment and be more honest with our population. When we have to say there is room for improvement here, we will say so, and we will probably find different elements that will help us work better on these challenges. Our challenge is to make sure that public authorities have legitimacy in our country, that people trust that civil servants are doing their job, that are doing something very specific to promote democracy and their well-being, not at a macro level, but precisely that day-to-day work, so that people can feel that the presence of the public authorities improve their well-being. And that's one of our main challenges. We're very happy because we included it in our general plan and also in the plan of the Ministry of Finance. Thank you very much, Minister. I would like to highlight some of the things that you said, this idea of an ongoing discussion or debate. So it's not a specific moment during the execution or approval of the budget, but rather this ongoing dialogue to invite society to engage in such dialogues, engage in the planning process of the budget. Something else that I would like to highlight is the joint work that you already have together with civil society organizations. This may sound obvious, but it could be one of the most difficult things to achieve. For governments to see in civil society a space for constructive feedback, constructive work. And the last point that I would like to highlight is budget efficiency, how these promises can transform in better social investment to improve the quality of living of your citizens. Thank you very much for very specific ideas that you have shared and about what you're planning to do in the coming months.
Earlier, Lisa always is not shy to say that she started as a budget analyst. I also mentioned the very important Civicus monitor that is released by Civicus, and it was just released a few months ago. And unfortunately, it did show that a third of the world's population live in countries where civic space is closed. We've seen, unfortunately, more authoritarian governments, more violence, more conflict. In this challenging context, Lisa, what can be done? What is the link between open budgets and democracy, and what can be done to strengthen both?
Thank you for the question, Ana Patricia. I want to start off with something that the minister has already said, and that's at the fundamental foundation for a budget dialogue, for budget transparency, or for fiscal participation is trust and legitimacy, right? And that's something that can't be achieved overnight. It takes a really systematic investment in not just providing information, but also enabling the unpacking of that information, the review of various variables and factors that have led to the investment at a particular level, and then the opportunity to actually look at alternatives. And I know this from my own experience because I've spent hours in front of the finance department of the Municipal Corporation of Mumbai waiting for the budget documents, and then you take them back, you analyze them, you try to figure out how the narrative that you build with communities can actually be organized. And then that requires looking at least the past data of several years before you can come up along with others with a plan of action. And then of course there's the political engagement, right, to have that discourse. So I just want to appreciate what's already been said in the video, in the intervention so far about the commitment to this process, because it's not a once-off process. It's not as easy as just publishing, your budget speech, and then that's the end of it, and people can do whatever they want with it. It's a much longer journey, and everybody who's committed to that journey is obviously doing so from a sense of real belief in the right to participation, in the ability for communities and citizens to engage. So in that context, I mean, we do know that most of the world lives in spaces which are far more hostile to the idea of civic participation. It's only about 2% of the world's population that lives in contexts where they can freely exercise, you know, their three civic freedoms, which is the freedom of expression, the freedom of association, and the freedom of peaceful assembly. Our reports and our research has shown that the main trigger actually for social unrest and mass protests, particularly towards public institutions, is usually economic mismanagement, rising costs, and the experience of, you know, economic and social inequality. And a lot of that has to do with decisions that are made in terms of how resources are distributed, how resources are raised, and, you know, how they're managed. So in a way, the budget, you know, transparency and participation piece, even though it's quite complex, very time and resource intensive for those involved, and requires, you know, a much slower pace than I think a lot of the other political and technical outputs that you can see in the governance domain, is so important, because that's probably the most important way to build trust and to build an ongoing engagement and dialogue between government and citizens, which is what the world desperately needs right now. And in doing so, you know, recognizing the role of community organizations, community leaders, and civil society at large in being able to not just critique spotlight the gaps, but also bring forward the alternatives is critically important. In most countries where social audits have been mainstreamed, it has been civil society in various and diverse forms, not just, you know, big organizations, but small local organizations as well, who've provided those alternatives. So in a way, the budget, you know, participation and transparency piece really offers us a way to get out of the black and white narrative of government and communities, right? It's not one against the other. It really provides a practical way in which we can actually build that muscle of collaboration, of engagement, and of looking at alternatives for the future.
Thank you so much, Liz. I think starting with the last part is key for us, is how this allows us to not create lines and divisions between the role of the government and civil society, and how this can really be a process where civil society and other actors not only identify gaps, but also solutions and alternatives. So that's one thing that I would like to repeat from your remarks. You also said many things, many important things, but two more that I would like to remind us of. One, that this is a journey. You said that the building that trust, that legitimacy takes time. And we are, all of us today, joining virtually, embarking or following this journey. And then the other very important thing that you said from the research that Civicus has conducted is that many times, of most of the time, social unrest comes from inequities, comes from a mismanagement of the economy. And that there also the budget process plays a very important role. So thank you so much.
And now I would like to turn to Karim Trabelsi. And we're so happy to have you with us today. And we've been talking about the fact that your union in Tunisia has played a critical role in representing the voice of over a million workers in Tunisia, and that you've been working on the budget process and improving this process so that it is more open and there's greater citizen participation. So can you talk about what strategies your union has pursued to advocate for greater budget accountability? And how has this helped you advance your cause for workers' rights, for the more than 1 million workers that you represent in Tunisia, so that they have better rights and that this continues to get better over time? Thank you, Patricia. And thank you for this invitation. We have more than 850,000 members, and we represent more than 1 million workers in Tunisia. And we have a lot of historic legitimacy but also we have been very strongly rooted in Tunisian society, and the role of the UGTT goes well beyond just the classic traditional mission of a labor union. We also work to improve not only working conditions for workers, and but also just to promote the general well-being. The UGTT has always played a very important political role as well, especially during the democratic transition in Tunisia, which occurred in 2015. However, I would say that the question of budget transparency and accountability is something that is not only being promoted by the union, but it's a rather recent area that the civil society is becoming involved in. In Tunisia, this interest in budgetary issues was something that came about as of 2011 with the recurring results that came out in the OBS. And this stimulated a lot more interest in the budget process. And in Tunisia, we've had a lot of conferences and a lot of awareness campaigns when we have tried to promote the results of the OBS. And this has really generated a lot of interest amongst civil society to be able to have this idea that the budget is a tool that the civil society can use to help improve their lives. But also, interest has been generated through the context of our economic crisis that we've been undergoing over the past 10 years. And we've had growing inflation rates. We've had a budget deficit, which continues to grow year by year, and also increase in public debt. So in this crisis context, the labor union in Tunisia has understood one thing that is very important, and that is that increasing wages is not the only way we're going to improve workers' well-being. There are other ways, other paths to engage in to help improve their lives. And one of these paths is the budgetary path. So it's in this framework that I would like to talk about some of the successes that we've had and with the UGTT, and to show how you can use the budget as a tool to promote rights, workers' rights, and to improve their living conditions. We've had a campaign underway since 2016, and when we launched this national campaign, this was to promote fiscal justice in Tunisia. And just as a quick side note, in Tunisia, we have had a lot of growing injustice in terms of salaries and wages, and people have really felt all these fiscal issues. And we've seen a lot of negative impact on both businesses and workers. So the idea of this campaign was to promote fiscal progressivity and a progressive tax rate, because our current tax rate did not take into account people's ability to actually pay. And so we wanted to revise the tax rates, the income tax rates, and to have a progressive tax rate. So this campaign had two main objectives. The first was to lower the tax burden for workers who had very low income, and at the same time, raise tax rates slightly for those who did have higher incomes and were able to pay more, without falling into the trap of making this a deterrence for businesses. So we have been leading this campaign, and we have been looking at budgetary constraints and that need to be taken into account with these reforms. So the alternatives that are being proposed also have to be supported by a reasonable budget. So it's in this context that we adopted a strategy, and we had several stages. The first was information and awareness raising. We had a big advocacy campaign where we asked the Ministry of Finance during the budget discussions in 2017 to give us a very detailed breakdown of tax brackets and the tax rates. And this was very important because, first of all, this was not available in the budget documents that had been published up to that point. And this enabled us to be able to run some simulations and to look at what the impact would be of these various reforms that were being proposed, and also see what the impact would be of these new tax rates on workers' lives. And so we finally did get this information from the Ministry of Finance, which was open to working with us on this. The second stage, we conducted a research program, and we examined the impact of all the different scenarios that were possible and how it would impact a worker's purchasing power and also fiscal revenues that would be and the tax revenues and how they would be impacted by these different scenarios. So we analyzed all the scenarios, and then in the third stage, we did a joint economic mission with representatives and experts from the labor union and the Ministry of Finance. And we negotiated various different scenarios. And in the end, we agreed on a table of tax rates following the discussions with this joint committee, which did bring down the tax rates for some of the lower income tax rates and brackets, and then increased taxes for certain categories. And so now we have a new tax schedule, which is more equitable and more progressive. But at the same time, it also basically ensures that we will have the same overall level of tax revenue for the government. So we are trying to promote equity without sacrificing fiscal expenditure. And this is a complicated equation, but it's something that is possible. And then the fourth stage was advocacy and with the parliament and lobbying with the parliament, because even though the executive branch accepted this new idea and this reform, the challenge then was to convince the legislators to adopt this reform. And that's what we did in December 2016. As we were, as they were discussing the budget for 2017, we asked to be able to have some hearings and be able to talk with members of the parliament. And we advocated, we lobbied members of parliament and tried to encourage them to vote for this new reform, which would have been included in the state budget for 2017. So that's an example of something, of a place where, or rather, how you can adopt a strategy that can be effective with concrete strategies using budget information. And it's not necessarily a magical formula or recipe, because contexts can change, and also the nature, the behavior of government can change as well. You might have a more open government, more receptive government, and then after another election, you might have a parliament that's, or government executive that's not as open. So there, your advocacy tactics have to change, you have to adapt, and you have to be more, perhaps you might have to be more active or more aggressive in your lobbying or advocacy. And you have to also mobilize people on the ground to get more support and to apply more pressure. So it really all depends on the attitude of the decision makers and whether or not they're open to the demands of civil society or not. Oh, thank you so much.
With that, I want to thank you to our speakers today. It's been really fascinating to hear you, how you really provide some specific recommendations from your experience. And I don't know what about you, but what I'm hearing today is trust, democracy, accountability. This is a journey. This is about political power. This is about the fight against inequality and corruption. It's about bringing all of the actors, including legislators. Is about thinking about diverse audiences. Who knew this would be the words that I would highlight in a conversation about budget? But that's the link that we want to make if we really want to transform things, and we want to be and have to be actors, active actors in this process. Of course, this wouldn't be possible with a fantastic IBP team. I am so proud of all of you. I know you've been working on this for 2 years. And you have not slept for the past week. I cannot mention every single one of you, but you know who you are. This is a team effort, and this could not have been possible without you. And of course, our partners, 125 countries. And we will be, of course, very happy to hear what is happening in your countries, in your organizations, to promote this reform. change is possible, and it's only possible because we are here in this journey together. Thank you all very much.
With this, we came to the end of this podcast. You can listen to our podcast across various podcast platforms as well as on our official website, that is freedomforum.org.np/podcast. If you have any feedbacks or suggestions, do write to us on freedomforum2005@gmail.com. That is freedomforum2005@gmail.com. Lastly, we will cover the Nepal Open Budget Survey 2023 on our next podcast discussing its findings and recommendations. With this, today's host, Subhash Dahal, would like to end today's podcast. We will be back next week with another episode. Till then, keep listening Freedom Chowdhury podcast. Stay safe and goodbye.